Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, where we are waiting for the book to come back, and we know when that is, which is quite exciting. We don't know precisely when it is. We know roughly when it is. We know it's September.
Yeah.
September. So that's just a few short months. Woo.
Woo. Yes, hello. I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarde. I have to think about that for a second. You can also reach us on waitingfordoom@gmail.com, on Facebook, and all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Podbean.com. Did you see that person downloading all our episodes today in the US?
No, I didn't. Thank you, yep. American person.
Thank you, unknown US person. What am I doing now? Okay, yes. I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at @reading_hicks. And the Sentient Show Twitter account is Wilfred at WFTpod. Yeah, so that's exciting.
Mm. Yes. This week on the show, we're heading back to the quirky, crazy, colourful land of Grant Morrison and Richard Case as we look at issues 47 and 48 from Volume 2 of Doom Patrol.
Gets
a little bit sexy in this one, kids. Well, adults, so maybe don't have the kids listening to this one.
Right.
Yeah. Just a warning there. Yeah. And as always, we are proudly sponsored and brought to you by ComicCosity.com, the world's greatest comic book loving website ever.
And yeah.
They've got all fantastic interviews, previews, reviews, some exclusive previews up there this week. And this week, they had a really cool interview with Magdalene Visaggio about her new upcoming comic called Kim and Kim, which is about a pair of queer spacefaring bounty hunters.
Yeah, I think one's transgender, actually.
Yes, this is true, as Magdalene is herself. So, you know, it's going to be a very interesting read, I think. And they've got some really cool previews of the artwork up there, too. So I'm keen to see what the team brings to the table. So yeah, looks very interesting. Yeah,
that's from Black Mask, I think.
Correct. Yes, it is.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. No, that was a good interview. Yeah, everyone should check that out if they're interested.
Yes, but anyway, Paul, how's your week been in comics and such?
My week in comics has been fabulous, fabo. Yes. Ooh. I didn't intend to rave about this book, but I borrowed Bizarro from the library, which Ooh. Is one of the DCU books that came and went in a flash. Mm-hmm. It was always intended to be 6 issues, so it didn't really get cancelled, but it sure would have if it... No, there's nothing wrong with it, but it was very funny. And one of the things I enjoyed about it was it's written by Heath Corson, who writes a few of the DC animated movies, like the Suicide Squad one. And,
okay.
Throne of Atlantis and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But the art was by a guy called Gustavo Duarte.
Right.
Which I could be wrong. But every now and again, there would just be a splash page by a guest artist in the middle of an issue. So, you know, you'd have a Bill Sienkiewicz cover splash page suddenly. You'd have a Darwin Cook one or Tim Sale. And they were incredible. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, by the actual artist, not.
Yeah, by the actual artist.
And wow. Okay.
Incorporated into the story. So, and it was a very funny story. So, Bizarro is a nuisance in Metropolis, and Superman suggests that Jimmy Olsen takes him on a road trip to Bizarro America, which is Canada. Yeah. So, you know. Just a couple of guys on the road, wackiness ensues. So, but there were lots of nods to DC characters past and present. So, you know, there's at one point the ghost of Jonah Hex shows up. There was little gags everywhere, like, you know, the Parliament of Trees discussing philosophy and things like that. It was a good fun read, and I really recommend it. So much better than I would have expected. So
yeah, you may have sold me on it now.
Mm. Yeah, it was lots of fun. No Doom Patrol, but still lots of fun. And, I mean, like Bizarro speak can be really annoying at the best of times, like really hard to read. And this made it fun because I think you had Jimmy translating at all times.
Okay. So,
or, you know, talking back to him. So,
right. Cool.
Yeah. So, you know, Bizarro is about to leave and he says, down, down and present instead of up, up and away.
Bizarro.
Yeah, so that was a good laugh. So cool. I quite enjoyed that. What else? I saw the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows film.
And how was that?
It was a hell of a lot better than the first one. Well, considering the previous one, let's call that the first one.
Right. When I'm talking about it.
So, you know, it's still sexist as all get out, but it was a lot more. I mean, I think just not having to do an origin sort of, you know, freed it up a bit, and then it brought in, you know, Bebop and
Rocksteady.
Rocksteady, yeah.
How was Krang in this one?
Krang was in this one.
How was the Krang CGI or whatever it was they used to bring him to life?
Pretty bloody good. Yeah, okay. Lots of fun. Yeah. And it just gets on with it. Like the action scenes just go and go and go. There's no stopping to explain things. It was never tedious. It was, you know, one. Yeah, a pretty good comic book movie. I would recommend that. And, you know, I took my 11-year-old and it was, you know, perfectly suitable for him.
Cool.
I thought, yeah. So, fun.
Good stuff.
What about you, Mike?
I've actually caught up on some of my comics, but a lot of them were final issues, which was a bit bizarre and a weird theme. Let me see. Rachel Rising, that finished up. That had a really good ending and answered a couple of questions that have been around since the first issue. Amiga Men, that wrapped up. That's probably my favorite Kyle Rayner, the Green Lantern story ever. And a lot of really interesting comments on war and what happens to people during and after it as well.
I've had that trade bought for about 3 months now.
Oh, just cool.
Won't be out for another 3 months, but yeah. I paid for it 3 months ago.
Well planned in advance, sir. Yeah. A couple of comics from guests we've actually had on the show. The final issue of Welcome Back by Chris Sabella. That had a really good ending and wrapped up the story quite well. Jeff Parker's writing on Future Quest. That was a lot of fun. That was so much fun. I'm like, yes, I want more right now. and the next issue of Mighty Zodiac by Jay Torres. So, you know, catching up on what our former guests have been up to. All really great reads. And the other big finish for me was Justice League 50, the end of the Darkseid War. That was huge. There was so much going on in that. It was amazing. So, yeah, it was a good... And I've still got more comics there to catch up on as well. So, and I've got about... less than 100 pages left of Joe Hill's Horns to get through. So that's taken a very dark turn. And it's focused on a character that I just keep swearing at every time he does his next dastardly act. And oh, I hate the guy so much. Not Joe Hill, the character.
Is it Donald Trump?
No, it's not, but you know, now I've got that mental image. Thank you very much. So yeah, it's been a good week all around. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
Go team.
Yeah, you know what time it is now then.
Tell me, Paul, tell me.
It's that time where we go down on Derrotin Way.
Okay, Paul, so what have you seen when you've gone down on Derrotin Way this week?
Nothing.
Oh.
There is no updates on anything to do with Derrotin Way Doom Patrol. There is not a single blog post, not a sketch. Actually, shall I check live now? Let's have a live check right now.
Ooh,
just in
case.
This is
exciting.
Hold
on to your seats, listeners.
Everybody, it is off the chain. This is the show.
Hello, fellow young kids.
This show is, you know, if it was a vehicle, it would be in all-wheel drive mode going off the cliff. How do you spell Jared Way? Jared Way.
G-E-R-A-R-D.
Way.
W-A-Y. Okay, so,
where's his website? Okay, jaredway.com. Let's have a look. It's very exciting.
Ooh, look, I'm glued to my seat.
Tingly. Why are you glued to your seat?
Because I don't want to go anywhere to miss this amazing segment.
Wow.
Yep.
Page cannot be found.
Wow, well, that might explain why there's been no updates.
It might. Hang on. We'll try something else. No, there's no updates, mate.
No updates?
Nothing.
Well.
Nothing.
Oh, that was exciting.
So that's it for going down on Derrington Way.
Oh, look there, blah, blah. Look over there. It's the Doom Clock.
Oh.
Where'd that come from? Okay, so no great surprises on the Doom Clock either this week. Issue 22, Volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run, still the last issue we had. Cover data July 2011, going on sale May 4th that same year. So it's been 5 years and 5 weeks since the last book, but we're edging ever closer to September. And I think it's this month in previews that they'll announce, is it this month or next month's issue of previews that they'll announce the street date for New Doom Patrol?
It is this month.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
So that should be next week. By next week's show, we should have the solicitations for September.
Ooh, might have to do some upgrades on the Doom Clock then.
Oh.
But yes, it's been 43 weeks since the team appeared in two different comics. So just over 10 months ago, we saw them in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale June 9th of 2010 for US $2.99, saw the release of issue 11 of Doom Patrol Volume 5 from Giffen and Clark. And this was titled Front and Center, and it saw Cliff leading the charge to rescue Rita from Thayer Joss's frontmen, which included Animal Vegetable Mineral Man and the Toy, who we hadn't seen since the Brotherhood of Dada. So that was a nice sort of throwback there to a bit of Doom Patrol legacy. And of course, because it's Giffen, it had Ambush Bug helping the patrol out as well. I vaguely recall a scene where he teleported them into the men's room of Thayer Joss's building.
Oh, where, that one, yes.
Where Sven and an AVM man had gone to the men's room and suddenly he's getting punched through the wall by Cliff. Lovely stuff. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Warlord Worlds, a fan podcast devoted to the comic creations of Mike Grell, including Warlord, John Sable, Starslayer, Shaman's Tears, and Green Arrow. I'm Darren.
And I'm Ruth. We hope you'll join us as we discuss the stories, characters, and art in the many excellent comics from writer and artist Mike Grell.
Warlord Worlds is available at podbean.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
Find us at warlordworlds.com.
Right, it's time for that part of the show that we call Doomsplaining, where we explain things to do with the Doom Patrol, which is why it's called Doomsplaining. Anyway, today we're looking at two issues from Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol, from the Morrison Case era, and they are issues 47 and 48. So, Mike, you've got 47. Take us into it.
I shall take us into it. Doom Patrol 47, titled The World, the Flesh, and the Devil. Ooh, spooky. Cover date September 1991, going on sale August 6th of that year. Cover price of $1.50. Nice. Edited by Tom Robert Payer. Written by Grant Morrison. Penciled by Richard Case. Inks by Mark McKenna. John E. Workman Jr. did the letters. And Daniel Vozzo was a colorist. So, team we've had on there for a while, and they're still doing a good job, but this issue gets a little bit back to Morrison stuff, I guess we could say. It's
just a little bit.
Just a little bit, yeah. So we open the issue, and the first page we see a wall of text regarding the shadowy Mr. Evans. And this massive script is warning us that he may be the first adversary, the true serpent of Eden and tempter of man. And there's a paragraph saying, you know, where we start to get into Morrison, saying the shadowy Mr. Evans is real, lord of meaningless mottos, sworn enemy of the grand old dukes of nothing in particular. He dwells at length in his dreamy library of dust, spiraling through the frayed edges of adolescent daydreams in darkened rooms. His house is a torture chamber filled with potpourri and spidery lace. Writing love songs for jangling guitars in the antique dusk, he's the all-certain someone, the duende, the anti-critic, and the dizzy wet schoolmaster. And now, by crikey, he's coming back.
Well done, Mike.
Oh, jeez. I think it's interesting that they also give away the dreaded words that can summon shadowy Mr. Evans. And those words are kneecap, single-handed, sheet music, and lottery. Congratulations on anyone that just won Morrison Bingo there. So we then see we're taken to a brothel in Berlin in which the clients can only be satisfied at the hands of ghosts, of course. And having a drink inside this brothel, we see Mr. Willoughby Kipling, who we haven't seen since issue 33. Which we discussed way back in episode 22. He's trying to enjoy a quiet drink while a hooded figure comes up to him and tries to discuss the impending apocalypse and the return of shadowy Mr. Evans. We then cut away to the Doom Patrol headquarters where the team are still faced with a bizarre clock-faced creature we were shown at the end of issue 46, which we discussed back in episode 54. And this creature's repeatedly asking, "Is it that time already?" And then the bells in his cathedral-shaped head are bonging away. Bonging's the right word for it. Probably means something.
Bonging is the word.
Bonging, right. Bonging away bonging is something you do at parties, apparently. At the chief's suggestion, Robot Man adjusts his visual settings in his eyes and discovers that the creature is nothing more than a cloud of gas, which then mysteriously dissipates. And the chief theorizes that what they all just witnessed was nothing but a cloud of ionized air generated by piezoelectrical discharge from quartz deposits in their mountain base, producing enough alterations to their electrical activity in their brains that it triggered a mass hallucination. Of course it did. Of course. With this quote-unquote threat gone, the team disperse, with Chief locking himself in his private lab, which last time we saw Rebus was giving him grief over, saying, you know, "I know what you're up to." And Chief says, "No one is to disturb me for the next 5 hours, which is pretty specific. And at this point, Jane goes up to Cliff and says, "Hey, let's go out for a coffee." And Cliff says, "Sure." Meanwhile, we see Josh is taking a private phone call, commenting on, you know, how unusual the situation with the team is, but he will tell him, whoever that is, that something is happening on Friday at 1:30. He hangs up the phone and mutters to himself, "Well, shit." And we next are taken to Rebus's darkened room, where Rebus is studying their I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, I just know. Is it Matryoshka dolls? The Russian nesting dolls. I think I've pronounced that correctly.
I can't help you there.
I'm sure one of our listeners in Russia will get in touch with us and let us know.
Help us out, comrade.
Oh, my God. So Josh enters the room when Rebus is studying his nesting dolls, and he's sharing the news on the call he just received. Josh tells Rebus that their mother died and that it's the funeral that's on at Friday at 1:30. So Rebus turns to Josh and says, "Which mother?" And we should probably remind people that Rebus is technically at least two, probably three beings in the one body. Larry Traynor, the original Negative Man. Eleanor Poole, who was the nurse looking after Larry way back when this run started. Well, when Morrison took over. And the Negative Being. And they all kind of join together to form Rebus. And Josh kind of freaks out and says, "It's Larry Traynor's mother, for God's sake." And then he storms out. And poor Rebus is left lamenting that, you know, maybe they should have gone seeing the mother before she passed away. See, Rebus does have feelings occasionally.
When... Oh, he comes through cold, though, where he says, yes, she was an old woman. It was only a matter of time.
Yeah, there is that. So, we have another change of scenery, and this time we're taken to lovely Venice, and we see Dr. Silence attempting to study the remnants of the painting that ate Paris. And if you remember back in episode 54, we last saw Dr. Silence acquiring the painting in issue 46. So this is straight on after that. So Dr. Silence is trying to, he's sitting there having a cigarette, intently staring at this painting and having all these weird semi-mathematical equations going on in his head. Although he's also got a song stuck in his head at the same time. Paul, I don't know about you, but I'm 95% sure it's Kylie Minogue's I Should Be So Lucky.
I think you're right.
Yeah. That came out about 3 or 4 years before this issue. So, yeah, it was It was a very popular song.
In Paul, Britain.
How dare you, sir? That woman is a living national treasure.
Oh, sorry. I meant more to imply that it wasn't a hit in America.
Right. Okay. Nice save.
A hit in Australia and in England.
Thank you very much.
And probably some European countries as well.
It's okay. You've recovered now. It's fine. Meanwhile, Jane and Cliff are trying to enjoy their coffee outing, despite the other diner patrons all staring at them intently. Jane's trying to explain to Cliff that with the emergence of the Liza Radley personality, thanks to Cliff's help, the underground within her is in turmoil and all the other personalities are going to fight her for control. And Jane's a bit worried that Cliff won't be able to help her, but Cliff remarks that he's getting the hang of all the strangeness. And when he said that, I thought, what, only now? He's been dealing with strangeness for decades. So
yeah.
And Cliff says, you know, he'll do whatever he can to protect Jane. And at this point, Jane heads to the ladies' room after saying, okay, it's time. And Cliff does a shrug and doesn't know what's going on. I think a shrug is going to be a new thing on this show. There's another really cool picture of a shrug.
Yeah.
Skipping. We turn to Rebus's room where they too are also saying, yeah, it's time. And despite being scared, they begin to remove their bandages, revealing severely damaged skin. It's looking motley and grey and not healthy at all. And Rebus says, I didn't think I'd be such a mess. Well, you've been under radioactive bandages for years, but anyway. And then, thank the Lord, we cut away to a very Morrison scene. We have shadowy Mr. Evans waltzing around his lovely place, complaining about how beastly it is to contemplate relocating to the physical plane again. And to cope with this vulgarity, shadowy Mr. Evans has a young boy named Clanky cut his hand with a shaving a razor blade. And Evans starts rubbing his hands together while the blood pours out. He then shoots a ballerina who is commenting that she's found some poetry because Mr. Evans hates poetry, apparently. And then he ashes his cigarette into the mouth of a chair-bound torture victim.
Just another Morrison comic at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. We cut back to the diner. Jane has exited the ladies' room. She now has blonde hair and, let's call it, a red outfit that leaves very little to the imagination. It's like a very tight corset and a very short skirt and stockings. And she looks, how can I put this? Like a lady of the night, shall we say.
I'm not saying a thing.
Okay. You'll get to say lots more when you talk about your issue. talking rather salaciously, she's coming on to Cliff and she's lighting a cigarette and she's quite aroused at this stage, and she says, you know, I can't even think of how to censor it, but basically she puts a lit cigarette into her inner thigh and gets very excited by that as well. Cliff starts to panic, grabs her, leads them out of the diner, but Jane has other plans and she begins propositioning people on the street. She sees a young man and a woman, a couple walking together, and she goes right up to the man and grabs him in the junk, as the people say. And she lifts her skirt up to flash other people on the street, and she's screaming obscenities when she's rejected by them all because they don't know what the hell's going on. And we have another Morrison cutaway, and we, the reader, are told that we are now dreaming, and we see a young woman performing at a gymnastics event, and then she's heading home and taking a shortcut through an abandoned train station, And as we, the reader slash streamer, are watching this happen, we see that all the while a gaunt, deathly looking man is close behind, and this figure is also chasing after the woman. And suddenly, the dream and reality collide. Like, the street that Cliff and Jane are on becomes the train tracks that we saw in the dream. And people start freaking out, and some of them start muttering, kneecap, single-handed, sheet music, lottery. Yes, the words that can summon shadowy Mr. Evans. And then he suddenly appears, arms outstretched, standing before a three-eyed blue pyramid, yelling, "Reverse my buttock, Sergeant Major."
With vegetables and dragonflies hovering around and a baby connected to an umbilical cord.
Yep. Yep.
So, yep.
Oh, Morrison, you scam. Yeah. What did you think of that one, Paul?
Can I be blunt?
Please do.
This is one of my least favorite issues of this entire run. I got really fed up with the comic at this point when it was coming out monthly. Like, it was like, oh, it was just more weirdness for weirdness' sake. It didn't seem to be. Mm-hmm. Thematically, I couldn't pass it at the time. I struggle to do so now. I mean, I get the Jane stuff. Like, Jane has, she's a victim of abuse, so she's manifested an aggressively sexual personality now to try and take back a bit of that control, and you know, her behavior is wildly inappropriate
yes.
to say the least.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, the Mr. Evans is just another bizarre foe for the Doom Patrol in a long stream of bizarre foes at this point. Like, he has like a periscope coming out of his head and those little handles that fold down where his ears are, and yeah, it's just more of the same, and I was a bit tired of it at the time.
Yeah.
How about you, Mike?
I will agree with you. I think by this stage, it's not losing steam, but yeah, getting a bit overdone with the bizarreness, I get, you know, when we look back at the Drake and Premiani stuff. I mean, bizarre stuff happened there as well, but it wasn't so over the top. You know, all their villains were bizarre then. I mean, hell, you had a brain in a case and a talking monkey and stuff. And so it's, in some ways you can think, well, yeah, it's got the spirit there, but it's, I found the stuff, the interactions between the team themselves more interesting than anything to do with shadowy Mr. Evans. I mean, it hits you in the face from the first page that, yes, this is the big bad for this new story, and here are the things that summon him, and here is his backstory, and he is, you know, he was a snake in the Garden of Eden. He's very bad. Yeah, okay, sure. But it was more interesting seeing Josh and Rebus interact with each other, and the chief sneaking off to do his stuff for 5 hours in the lab, and even just Cliff and Jane going off for their coffee date, and then it all going horribly wrong. That was far more interesting than anything else that happened in the issue. So, I mean, it's, in a way, well, yeah, it is resolved and explained more in the issue you're about to talk about, but still, just, you're right, it's kind of like, okay, it's, sure. Good on you, Grant. Yeah, sure. Next, please.
Just a couple of observations. After reading the early part of Volume 2 by Kupperberg, Josh is a hulking physical man, like hugely muscled, quite tall. And throughout the Morrison run, he's been getting sort of more and more normal man-sized.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting less and less physically imposing as the comic goes on. Mm-hmm. And he's never a man of action in this run. Like, I think he's sworn to pacifism by the start of the Morrison run, you know, being a doctor. But yeah, it's just very striking, the physical contrast between how he was portrayed before Morrison came along and afterwards.
When Morrison's run starts and the chief is establishing the newish team and the new base, Josh kind of makes it clear that, you know, he just wants to hang around and be the team medic and nothing else. So I guess that is kind of more noticeable as we go on, because you're absolutely right. When we do, even the recent couple of big books we've looked at, he's flying around and, you know, doing power blasts from his hands and leading the team with Cliff, and now he's just wearing sweaters all the time. Nothing against people wearing sweaters. It's just, yeah, as you say, quite noticeable. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a picture of Cliff in the close-up when Crazy Jane comes out as in her new persona. I reckon that's the reference that Ryan Ottley used for that picture he did on Twitter. He did
okay.
Cliff Steele commission.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. Yeah.
The detail inside the mouth with the sort of red levers and things inside the mouth. Anyway.
Well spotted, yeah.
Yeah, shall we move on?
Please tell us all about issue 48, Paul.
Okay, so this issue 48 has the ugliest cover of any Doom Patrol comic ever. It's a sort of grey-purple mess by Simon Bisley.
Mm-hmm.
It came out with a cover date of October 1991. The actual day it hit was September the 3rd, 1991. It was edited by Tom Payer. It's called Entertaining Mr. Evans, which is the shadowy Mr. Evans of the previous issue. Mm-hmm. Written by Grant Morrison again, penciled by Richard Case, inked by Scott Hanna, who I always think of as a Robin, part of the Robin creative team. Anyway, lettered by Johnny Workman Jr. again, and colored by Daniel Vozzo again. So, now, I'm choosing to do this story in a different way. I have the book Grant Morrison, The Early Years by Timothy Callahan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to read his coverage of this rather than go through it myself.
Okay.
Because I think he's better at talking about this than I am because of my tiredness of it. Anyway, so here we go. Mr. Evans receives his comeuppance in Doom Patrol 48 with the help from the bizarre Sex Men. The Sex Men, who bear name tags like Kiss and Cuddle and have lipstick marks and blue pyramids on their heads, are not only off-putting in appearance, but they are ineffective as well. They do at least provide some helpful exposition in the form of first-person Dragnet-style narration about Mr. Evans, saying he's left a total eroticization of everything in his wake. Mr. Evans himself agrees, but has a different perspective, of course, saying, I am the life force, the sex ray, the thrill of living that accompanies the awareness of the presence of death. I am Satan. In his cosmology, and perhaps Morrison's as well, Satan is not an evil force, but the force of unbridled life, in other words, chaos. But it's a specific type of chaos. It's the chaos that rejects conformity and sterility, as he goes on to explain in a sequence that provides a counterpoint to General Honey's rant about the ideal world without quirks from issues 44? Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
For Mr. Evans, normal suburban culture, such as dreamed about by General Honey and satirically mocked in the Mr. Jones sequence several months earlier, is the abnormal degenerative behavior because it crushes life with its banality. Mr. Evans seems to think that the forces of order and conformity have already won, and the Sex Men represent the voice of the so-called moral majority who would suck the life out of anything in the name of protecting family values. It appears Morrison is contemning the puritanical views of sexuality in the Western world, yet the choices made by the Scarlet Harlot, we find out the name of Jane's persona, and Mr. Evans are clearly not attractive lifestyles either. We would hardly wish for a fully sexualized world, just as we wouldn't wish for a desexualized one. It's important to note here that Morrison is raising this issue in a mainstream superhero comic book. It's easy to forget how subversive this stuff is because he does it so often. But he's exploring the very nature of metaphysical sexuality in a book that was drawn by Eric Larson only 3 years earlier.
True.
Anyway, because it is a superhero comic book and because there are no easy answers from Morrison, at least on this topic, the story is resolved with a trope from Superman's conflict with Mr. Mitzelpick. To defeat Mitzelpick, Superman must trick the imp into saying his name backwards. In Doom Patrol 48, Cliff tricks Mr. Evans into saying the words backwards, so the kneecap lottery, etc., that lead to the image of Mr. Evans being sucked through a dimensional portal. The Sex Men teleport away as well, and once again Cliff deflates any pretension and echoes the thoughts of so many readers with the final line, "Who were those lunatics?" The story basically ends there, but there is a coda. When Cliff and Jane, now back to her normal self, return to base, they and the rest of the Doom Patrol members open Rebus's door to find that it has abandoned all physical form. In its place, a glowing green circle hovers above the ground. Rebus has become the Ouroboros. Ouroboros.
Sure.
A snake that swallows its own tail, as foretold in the Insect Mesh storyline. It's the ultimate mind-body transcendence. Hmm. Mm. So, was that easier than going through the book page?
It was different, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do like the comparison to the earlier storyline where they were trying to bring about nothing but normality. And, yeah, this is the extreme polar opposite of that. Some of the earlier panels, like you have a guy and a girl, the guy's getting Russia drawn on him and the girl has America drawn on her and, you know, they're going to turn the Cold War hot. That sort of thing. And, you know, doctors and nurses at a hospital surgically creating new pleasure orifices in the bodies of coma patients.
Yeah.
A woman dressed as a dog chasing a man dressed as a woman for a bit of a thrill. And then, yeah, Jane's new persona, the Scarlet Harlot, who can produce ectoplasmic mannequins for her own shameless gratification. Yeah. And this is all in like the first few pages. It's quite over the top.
Yeah. And we get a little Fantastic Four tribute in the middle where Josh and the Chief sort of leap into action in a very Fantastic Four looking mobile flying thing. But I don't know the point of these two issues, to be honest.
There is a mention of a character that does appear later, and we've had hints of them in the past as well. But yeah, it's a very odd two-parter, which is saying a lot for this particular run of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, but the other subplot that gets progressed is Dr. Silence looking at the painting, and there's a black spot on it that keeps getting bigger and bigger, and he is horrified by that, and that will lead somewhere soon, I believe.
There is a particular panel I do like in this where after they've defeated Shadow Mr. Evans, and I like when Evans gets sucked away into the vortex, that the purple swirls actually have the words weird menace visible in them. But the panel immediately after that, you've got Jane as Scarlet Harlot kind of smiling with her head on Cliff's shoulder, and Cliff says, "Give me a break." And that's kind of how I felt at the end of this storyline. So yeah, but I can see why when you were reading this back in the day, Paul, that it would get a bit trying after so many issues of wackiness and bizarreness, which I mean is great, but, and we've said this before, when you get hit in the face with that so often, you kind of have your patience tested a bit. Yeah,
I think I struggled. I just couldn't see the direction of the comic anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, was it heading anywhere? At this point, I wasn't really sure. So that was hard at the time. Anyway, but I recovered.
Good to hear. I do have to say that despite the story being bizarre, I liked everything else about these issues. I thought the art was great and, you know, I couldn't fault that at all. But yeah, just the actual, If this was nothing but, you know, a text-based bit of prose, I don't know if I would have continued on with it. So, yeah. So kudos to the art team for sure. Yeah.
Thank you to Timothy Callahan for writing that so I could focus on what he wrote.
Yes, thank you, Timothy.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
I must believe.
One man leaves. Two men enter, one man leaves.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey everybody, it's Roy Charlemagne Cleary here from the Silver and Gold Podcast, a
want to tell you about a new show we got coming out called DC v. Marvel. We have this thing called the Randomizer. It randomly selects a Marvel character and pits them versus a random selected DC character. Whenever this happens, it compels me and my co-host from Silver and Gold, Jay Jones, to tell you who's going to win said combat because we can't reset the randomizer until we do so. We don't do it alone. We bring in a third guest to help analyze the fight. So check that out coming soon on the Silver and Gold podcast feed. The beta test episodes are going up now, but in the future, we're going to have more refined episodes with some of your favorite podcasters, super comic fans, captains of industry. They're all going to come and join us on DC v. Marvel. So look for those soon on the Silver and Gold podcast feed.
Can I talk?
You've said enough, Jay Jones.
We didn't say anything.
Yeah, but we're going to do the podcast now.
I want to say something.
No more talking.
It's time for the Mailbag of Doom, and this time we're looking at the question that we asked last week, which is, what is the last comic character you went all in on? So, yes, that was a tricky one for people. But we heard from Kevin at Red Sox Red Shoes, and he said, Starman, still am. And I remember Kevin. He was one of my mates from the Starman message boards when the James Robinson, Tony Harris Starman series was coming out. And didn't we love Starman? It was a terrific series.
I do like his comment that he wonders if Jack Knight was going to exist in the Rebirth universe. Just, you know, not fighting, just knowing that he's there. So that was cool.
Probably not given the relationship with James Robinson that DC has at the moment.
Controversial. We heard from Endless Mike at M.A. Solko, who said, for the modern era, Guthy from Copra. And for the retro era, he said, I've been picking up lots of World's Finest for Vigilante, Creeper, Green Arrow, and Black Canary backups. And he said, perhaps the precise answer is Ram Druid from two issues of World's Finest. That guy needs a comeback. I've never heard of Ram Druid before.
He looks like Dr. Savannah wearing Hawkgirl's out.
Yes, he does.
It looks sort of the character Morrison had latched onto at the moment.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I've never heard of Ram Druid, but he looks like a Zicko. We heard from Rift at Rift 1821, and he said, Green Lantern, a love that will never die. And it survived the movie, so yeah, it's true.
We heard from at Ostrakus 1, Newt Lake Victim here, or Kevin, as his parents named him. He said, the pre-New 52 Birds of Prey. I have an entire long box just for them and related comics. Cool.
Oh, that stuff is good. The Dixon stuff. Beautiful. Excellent. You should listen to the Birds of Prey podcast, Feathers and Foes, that by Ashford. That's a good show.
Cool.
Cool. Cross-plugging. We heard from Ange, Dr. Ange, and he said, we'll answer soon. But most recent have been initiated by listening to podcasts and getting intrigued. And then he said, I don't know if I'd say all in, but Rolled Spine, that's a Rolled Spine podcast network, has me interested in Tigra's origins. Tigra from Marvel. Yes. Anyway.
We also heard from Moby1 at Shmoby1 on the Twitters, and he said, the Plutonian. I read the $10 volume one of Irredeemable, the trade of that, and was hooked. Got the entire trade run and will get all of Incorruptible books too.
So, he did get them all.
He did get them all, sorry.
I actually borrowed them all from him and read
them. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how that went down.
Cool.
We had an answer on the Facebook, and it was from a listener called Jared Driscoll, who I've never heard of before. Welcome, Jared.
New listener. Hi, Jared. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jared. Yeah, welcome. And he said the Alan Moore, Chris Sprouse creation, Tom Strong. Yeah, that was pretty cool from the America's Best Comics line.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah, it looked interesting. Yeah.
Sort of a Doc Savage sort of tribute, homage, ripoff, somewhere in there. But yeah, really good stuff.
Cool. And over in the actual email section of the show, we got a couple of emails. The first one being from a friend of the show and one of the big wigs over at comicosity.com, Mr. Aaron Long. He titled his email in reference to our last episode. He said, you said you got no emails, so I've sent you an email. Thank you, Aaron.
Doesn't that warm the heart? That's warm the heart, doesn't it?
Warm something.
And we got another email from Martin Gray, who said, "Hi, guys. So sorry to hear that you had no email last week. So here's an email." But then he goes on to add something which is more useful than what Aaron did. First off, question of the week, a toughie. As I've been reading comics for so long, I've been able to buy things as they come out. So I had to think, and I think that the last comic I came to after the event and had a whale of a time collecting via trades was Preacher about 13 years ago. And now a pal has asked for a trade of the Garth Ennis Steve Dillon Funfest for his birthday, having watched the great Amazon pilot. Now, a question for you. Has Paul Kupperberg ever spoke about whether he even liked Irani? Did he always plan for her to be a fantasist? I doubt it, but I hope so. Otherwise, there's a bit of an Arisia element to the Chief's marriage to her. Catch you later, cobblers. Tackle it. Preacher, yeah, good choice. Sort of
excellent
timely
choice.
Do you know of any ways that people can find out more about Preacher at the moment, Mike?
Well, they can watch the new series by the cable channel AMC in the States. There's also a podcast called Gone to Texas, which people can choose to listen into, should they so desire.
Yeah. Who's behind that one?
Our friend Alison Baker. She's involved with that. And you can find that on Twitter if you look up at Gone to TX Show. That's G-O-N-E, the numeral 2, TX Show. And they're on, funnily enough, Podbean and Stitcher Radio and iTunes as well. So,
Was there any guest on the first episode?
Yeah, I guessed it on the first episode. And
I didn't know that.
Didn't you? Oh, surprise. And I'm, I guess, for want of a better word, producing the show for Allison. So there'll be, we have a guest list worked out so far. There's lots of people with interesting views and red hot love for Preacher. It's mostly going to be based around the TV show, which we have yet to get here by any legal means here in Australia. But there will also be colourful commentary on the comic book. So, yeah, there you go. As you said, cross-plugging.
Cross-plugging. As for the question about Paul Kupperberg and his appreciation for Irani, there is an element where in her origin, she describes that she was a child when she met Niles, the chief, and that they became married to protect her. And, you know, he gave her his genetic formula to make her live long. And so that's kind of creepy if that's exactly she tells it. And him saying there's a bit of an Arisia element. Arisia was the sort of underage Green Lantern alien girl that Hal managed to somehow age up artificially. Which,
that's a bit hot in this episode tonight.
And he wasn't possessed by Parallax at that point.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. That will be, I hope one day we get to ask Mr. Kupperberg that very question, because she, looking back on Irani now, you kind of feel sorry for her now that the Chief's back on the scene in where we're up to with that storyline. But too much emotion.
I think we'll get into that more in an upcoming episode very soon.
Sounds good. But what about you, Paul? What character did you last go all in on?
I have to agree with Kevin. It was Starman, the Jack Knight Starman. So, you know, I bought that entire run. I bought the these are as they're coming out. So, but I was, you know, there were little stories in Showcase about the Shade and Times Past issues, and then there was Batman Hellboy Starman, which came out, the 2-issue miniseries, which was great. There was the Shade miniseries. So I was just all over that stuff. And it was part of it was the lifestyle of just talking about it and thinking about it and, you know, wondering what was going to happen and speculating about the mysteries in the series at the time on the message boards. I mean, we even started a Starman soundtrack project where we would take we had a cassette that we were posting to each other as fans, and we'd all add a song as we went. And
wow.
I think I think it stalled after 5 songs and we never got it back. Anyway. Yeah, but that was my answer. Starman, Jay Knight, Starman by James Robinson and Tony Harris.
Cool. Hmm.
What about you, Mike?
I had trouble thinking of a character, because there's been characters where, like, they've had recent series and I've bought all that series, but I haven't gone back and hunted out previous stuff. Like Captain Marvel, I love Carol Danvers, but I've only really gotten into her with the Kelly Sue DeConnick stuff. I haven't gone back and looked for, you know, every appearance she made in the old Avengers stories back in the 70s and that. Same with Green Lantern. I only really got into him with Rebirth. But I didn't go back and look for the older stuff. I've just got everything since then. So my answer, as slightly boring and as predictable as it may seem, is going to be Robot Man as part of the Doom Patrol, because as people who've listened to me rave about the team before, it was Giffen Clark's run that rekindled my interest in the team, and specifically Robot Man. He's my favorite character on the team. And that's when I was going back and buying everything I could. You know, I was scouring eBay for days, you know, finding the back issues and hunting down the Showcase Presents collections. So, yeah, I just love Robot Man. He's the one for me. I just, you know, can't get enough of him. And yet, I'm not too keen on those recent, what was it? What's that recent comic he appeared in with Metal Man? Was that Legends of Tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm kind of holding off on modern stuff like that. But other than that, I've pretty much got every appearance he's ever made. So, until the new book starts in September, of course. So, yeah, I love Cliff. He's just, could rant about him for hours. We should do a podcast about him.
We should.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're interesting answers this week.
We could call it Cliff Notes.
Oh, God. We could indeed. Well played, sir. Well played.
And that's my dad joke for the week.
God. You and your dad jokes. Anyway, I think that's a perfect point to sign off for this episode, Paul. What do you think?
I think the perfect point was about a minute before that. Anyway.
Yeah, so if you want to get in touch with us, guys, you can always reach us via Wilfred at WFD Pod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And you can hunt us down and chat to us at reading_Hicks with an X, or at AvantGarve if you wish. So what are we talking about on next week's show, Paul?
Next week, we're going back to Volume 1, the fabulous 60s era, for issues 111 and 112.
Ooh.
And our question that we're asking everybody, it's a fun one, what's the worst thing that's happened to a comic that you own?
That's a bit dark. I'm actually keen to hear what people come up with for that one. There's got to be some horror stories out there. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Cool. Okay, well, that's us for this week. Thank you very much for joining us again, guys, and we'll catch you next time for more Waiting for Doom.
No worries. Bye.
See ya.
We're getting played all over the place now.
Sweet.
It's nice.
Should start charging them. Make some money, finally.
Yeah, Patreon subscribers, you can get our bonus episodes.
Yeah, nothing but outtakes. Oh, yeah.
Dad jokes.
Oh, no. Oh, we'll make that a very expensive Patreon item. Really get our value's worth out of that one.
Mm.
Okay, let's do it.
All right.